Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen, and I thank you so much for listening. As always, go snag your free top 200 study guide. It's a big PDF, 31 pages. I really highlight my most important clinical pearls, things that show up on pharmacology exams, as well as board exams, and things you're actually going to see in real life. So again, just for subscribing, simple email, you can have that resource absolutely for free, and we let you know when we've got updates and new content and new podcasts available there. So again, reallifepharmacology.com, go check that out. Okay, so the drug of the day today is furosemide, and if you're an avid listener, you know I've covered the loop diuretics in general, but wanted to get a little bit more detail out there specifically about furosemide, and that it is a loop diuretic. Brand name that you're going to hear in practice is Lasix. Definitely many patients and providers will refer it by the brand name. Mechanistically, so being a loop diuretic, that gives you a hint that the loop of Henle is impacted. So ultimately, it inhibits sodium and chloride reabsorption in the ascending loop of Henle, and that's in the nephron, of course. That's the considered the functioning unit of the kidney. And ultimately, with that loss of solute or sodium and chloride, water is going to go with it. And that's ultimately what gives you the diuretic effect. So again, that's fluid loss out through the urine. And obviously the uses for a loop diuretic like furosemide, we're going to use that to eliminate fluid and fluid excess. So heart failure, ascites with cirrhosis, or due to cirrhosis, I should say, those are by and large the most common indications that you're going to see this medication used for, and just generalized edema in general too. It is important to look at that patient medication list if you see a new prescription for a drug like furosemide, okay? Because that's indicative of a new problem, usually. So if you see a prescription for furosemide, it's you're going to be managing edema. You're likely not going to use it for blood pressure or anything else. And as a pharmacist, I'm always looking for drug-induced causes of problems. Okay, so that's kind of that prescribing cascade where you have a medication, causes a side effect, in this case, edema, and then you add another drug to treat that adverse effect. So some common meds to look out for, calcium channel blocker, which there's evidence to say that using furosemide may not really help that much with that type of edema versus a medical issue causing the edema. Pregabalin can cause some edema and swelling. Gabapentin, pioglitazone or Actos diabetes drug, not used terribly often anymore. And NSAIDs can cause some fluid retention. And obviously some issues there, and I will touch on NSAIDs with drug interactions as well, because there's more to play with that medication and the use of furosemide. All right, one thing that I have seen come up, I recall there being a recall on furosemide several years ago, I believe, or a shortage maybe would be a better way to say that. So you need to understand, or it can be helpful to know approximate dosing equivalents, so of some of the loop diuretics. So this is a question I have seen on board exams and things like that too. So dosing equivalencies again, this is just oral furosemide, 40 milligrams is approximately equivalent to bumetanide 1 milligram, or Bumex, another loop diuretic, and then the approximately equivalent to 20 milligrams of torsemide oral. And there is some evidence to say that it may be 10 milligrams as well. So that one's a little bit controversial. But remember, these are approximations. So anytime you switch somebody to a different drug, it's always a good idea to reassess that patient clinically. You know, whether that's looking at, you know, urine output, maybe lab work, that type of thing. So critical to pay attention with any conversion that it might not be exact, okay? Adverse effect profile, hypokalemia. Symptomatically, you know, obviously if you get severe enough, severely low potassium, you can have, you know, cardiac problems and things like that. So that's obviously a life-threatening type situation. But generally from, you know, mild hypokalemia, from patients, the most often reported issue that correlates with that, it has been like leg cramping and things like that. So if you ever hear of a patient reporting some cramping and stuff, electrolytes is definitely one of the things I look at. And then obviously as a pharmacist, thinking about those medications that could lower those electrolytes. So, and obviously furosemide is notorious for causing hypokalemia. Now, this is an example of the prescribing cascade as well, where we add furosemide for, you know, maybe a heart failure issue. We need it to run fluid off. And we also may need to use potassium supplements. And that's to get that potassium level up, because the furosemide is depleting potassium. So prescribing cascade, it can be a necessary thing. But think about it, if you take away furosemide, let's say the patient's doing better and they don't need it, or they just needed it for a short period of time, go back and look and say, hey, were they on a potassium? We're discontinuing this furosemide. Think about it and say, hey, do we really need this potassium supplement still if we're discontinuing the furosemide? So good little kind of trick there to try to reduce medications and polypharmacy. Drop in blood pressure can certainly happen with that fluid and electrolyte loss. Hyponatremia. So again, you're going to monitor electrolytes with furosemide. And then, of course, loss of renal perfusion, dehydration risk. So you're going to monitor kidney function. And making sure that renal function is not getting worse there. More rare things that I have seen come up occasionally, but not real common. Loops, furosemide is associated with elevated uric acid. Typically, we think of the thiazides as having it a little bit more. So again, those are those patients with gout. Elevations in uric acid could increase the risk for a gout flare. Rash, hypersensitivity reactions, they can happen. Ototoxicity and nephrotoxicity, I kind of mentioned nephrotoxicity before. This generally, specifically the ototoxicity, hearing loss, is going to happen with higher dosages, IV dosages, and patients that, you know, may have additional risk factors. And kind of the classic example that you may see show up on an exam or something is an aminoglycoside can cause ototoxicity as well. So, and I have done a podcast, I believe, on aminoglycosides, so you can go check that out if you want more info there. Bioavailability, I think, is important with furosemide when comparing IV to oral, because if you think about it, you know, you've got a heart failure patient, they've got acute heart failure exacerbation, they need to go to the hospital, we're going to likely use IV furosemide. So then after we've used IV furosemide, what exactly, you know, do we convert them to? And, you know, there's a lot of clinical reasoning that goes into what we're going to convert them to. You know, were they adherent to their medication therapy? Were they not adherent? And that's what put them in the hospital. So you're going to have to figure that out, you know, what is the appropriate dose to do. But as far as from a conversion standpoint, there is quite a bit of variability in the literature about truly what is the appropriate conversion. I would say I see a lot of clinicians approximate about 50% of the IV dose, or excuse me, it's approximately 50% bioavailable as an oral medication. So, for instance, if you had an IV dose of 20 milligrams a day on furosemide, that would approximately convert to 40 milligrams of furosemide. Again, not an exact science. You need to look at patients clinically. You need to closely monitor. And if it's a person discharging from the hospital, hopefully we're doing that so we don't put them right back in the hospital. But that's an approximation, and it's so critical to monitor that urine output, renal function, electrolytes, and all those things that go along with any conversion there. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material, such as BCPS, ambulatory care, geriatrics, MTM, psychiatric certification, go check out meded101.com/store. We've got a growing list of resources there. I update the content, go through and update the content annually to make sure that, you know, we're up to date with guidelines and things like that. I've also have obviously received feedback from folks over the, you know, 5 to 6+ years we've been doing this at this point. So, I think we've got some really nice resources, really helpful resources that can help you prepare for those exams. So, again, go check out meded101.com/store. If you're another healthcare professional looking for, you know, books, education, I've got a book in the works on polypharmacy and the prescribing cascade. So if you work a lot in geriatrics, I'm going to share tons of examples of some of the most common prescribing cascade mistakes that are made. That link, when it's ready, will be at meded101.com/store. Again, with all the other books, paperback, ebooks, audible books, go check all those resources out. Any purchase there is going to help support this podcast, and certainly I greatly appreciate it there. All right, so let's wrap up with drug interactions. First and foremost, I think of common drugs. So combinations of diuretics, ACEs and NSAIDs, or ARBs and NSAIDs, they can be really, really taxing on the kidney. So we've got to be really cautious and careful when we're using those drugs together. In a condition like heart failure, which loops are often found in and ACE inhibitors are often used in as best practice, you know, we've just got to be really, really careful and monitor kidney function and that fluid status and kidney function is kind of a yin-yang as far as aggressive hydration can reduce fluid, aggressive diuresis can obviously reduce fluid, help heart failure symptoms. But if we get overly aggressive, we can end up hurting that kidney. And certainly those other drugs, ACEs or ARBs and NSAIDs, can make that worse. So in anybody with heart failure, you're probably going to try to avoid NSAIDs at all costs. So that's something to keep in mind. If one absolutely has to be used, you know, minimize the dose, minimize the duration, and do the best we can to protect them, protect our patients from that risk of increased renal function issues there. Aminoglycosides certainly added nephrotoxicity and ototoxicity risk. SGLT2s, so if you remember, they're kind of classically considered an anti-diabetes agent, but they definitely have some cardiovascular benefits, so which they may end up being more of a cardiovascular drug versus a diabetes agent. But anyway, it does have added diuretic effects, so it can drop some blood pressure. In addition, that lowering blood pressure effect, obviously any medication used to lower blood pressure or used in the management of hypertension could have additive effects there. Also, you know, you think of maybe non-blood pressure medications. So your PDE5 inhibitors, you know, such as sildenafil, Sinemet, alpha blockers, you know, used in BPH like tamsulosin. So any drug that has that blood pressure lowering potential could obviously have some additive effects. I think of gout medications. I would say it's not crazy high on my list, but if I notice that allopurinol doses have been increased or that uric acid levels have gone up, it might be on account of the loop diuretic or the furosemide, and kind of counteracting that effect. And then there has been reports of kind of, you know, maybe a slight increase in blood sugars with loop diuretics. So I guess if you see escalating diabetes medication dosages, it could be on account of that. But I would say by and large, that's probably not a clinically significant thing to worry about there. So there's just a good summary of some of the more common drug interactions that I see with furosemide. Obviously, that doesn't include them all, but a good overview for you there. So if you enjoyed the podcast today, please leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Go to reallifepharmacology.com, get that free PDF, kind of a no-brainer for you to get there. And if you want to reach out to me, comments, questions, MedEducation101@gmail.com. It's probably the best way to track me down. Otherwise, you can find me on LinkedIn, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCGP, BCPS. So don't hesitate to connect with me there. All right, I'm going to sign off for today. Thanks again for listening and supporting the podcast, of course. Take care. Have a good rest of your day.